No,
Jan.
just yeah, life, right?
Yep.
Excited to be talking to you again.
Well, I am so grateful, so excited to be talking to you too. I probably shouldn't say this, don't quote me on it because I might offend some. The podcast I did with the two of you was my favorite podcast I've ever done.
Oh.
I had another couple of really good ones, but this one I just love doing it, and I like watching it, and the people I send it when somebody wants to know what I've done, like what or how I am, I always send them this one because I think it's got the way it moved along, the way you guys, asked the questions, the information covered, and how relaxed it was. I just thought it was great. So I'm thrilled to be back.
We appreciate that feedback. We try to keep it as informal as possible, but as informative as possible. Like, I always like to tell people when they ask if we have a predetermined list of questions, I always tell them, pretend we're meeting at a coffee shop and we're just chit-chatting. That's what I like to tell people.
It really flows that way. That's
Yeah.
my preferred way of actually talking to people anyway, and not sitting up with a microphone in front of a room. It's
Yeah.
little that's an important skill, which but these conversations are great, and this is what this issue needs, is conversations, not lectures.
Yeah. Well, before we get started, Georgian, do you have any questions or anything
No,
like
I'm
that?
just looking forward to the conversation. You did get my book, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for the book. So I finished it this morning.
Oh, great.
I
That's
felt
awesome.
like I learned a lot of information about your personal life that maybe you did cover in the first podcast that we did, but
Probably not. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts,
you
right?
really opened up a lot in that book. What does your family think about it?
Well, I don't think I would have been able to write this book were my mother still living. I think a lot of it would have made her very uncomfortable. She's not about the issue of circumcision. I mean, she was fine with that. But there were a lot of family, secrets that she probably would have, things she would have wanted to keep secret. There were family, anecdotes and stuff. My stepfather, the father who raised me, Hank, I talk about him in the book a lot. We had a very rough relationship when I was a child, and a better relationship as adult, as me being an adult. And since my mother passed away in this weird way that things happen in families, all the family relationships kind of resorted themselves. And he's like my biggest fan, and that was so, it helps that he's an English professor because he's just a wide reader. So he appreciates what people have to do with what people do with literature. But there's some pretty rough things, about my family in there. And he said, this is your truth. I see that this is your truth. And he said, and some of it's a little rough going for me, he said, but kind of counterintuitively, I'm really enjoying reading it, and then other family members have told me, and I didn't really think about this exactly, that the parts about my childhood that they were involved in, or about my young adulthood, and that it made them kind of nostalgic for those times. People really related to my friends. So yeah, it was tough to pull out all that stuff, and there were some things I was doing at the end that my co-author Echo Garrett told me I needed to do that really made me very worried and uncomfortable. They're just very, very emotional things to revisit. Like I didn't have a chapter in it about my marital breakup, and I just didn't. I couldn't write about it. And about 10 people said, "Whatever happened to your marriage? Why aren't you telling that story?" And then that was one where I worried about my son because that's his father I'm talking about. So it was writing a memoir is really, really hard. I never would have done it without the focus on this cause, because I really did feel like I could trace my concern and my passion for the circumcision problem that we have in this country. I really was I knew that I could pinpoint from the moment I knew about circumcision and saw what my brother went through. And then the rest, I did not talk a lot about his life. It's implied in there. But it was a very clear path that took me, to this issue, and still does. It's still, relevant to my life is relevant to it, and vice versa. So it was quite a journey. It took me about 4 years to write it. I know I was writing it when I talked to you all before. Anyway, so that, yeah, it was. I think there's an opportunity for me to, for the people who are less open to talking about, like, say, for example, other podcasts or book readings I do, less open to really thinking about the issue. I think one way to appeal to people like that is to talk about the process of writing the book. People are interested in that too. Like, wow, how'd you write this book? Not everybody writes a book. And I was always interested when I saw a good book. I'd like, wow, I would, what time did this person write it? How many hours a day did they write? All those things that you have to deal with. So that's a separate but very related issue that I'm interested in talking about.
I imagine the process is very therapeutic, putting things on paper. I'm wondering, did you learn a lot? Were you able to sort through some of these issues? And also, did you see things differently than you saw before after actually
Yes.
laying it out?
Yes to all of that. Therapeutic and also tortuous, right? I mean, that's what therapy is, right? Like if you got the good therapist and you're really willing to go into it, it can be very painful. So there was that. And a lot of insights, just like insights about regular things that happen in your life, is like, oh wow, I never really thought about that. This is what that meant. Or and then what was the second part of your question?
Did
Right?
you see things differently? Like you probably saw
Yeah.
things a certain way this whole time, but when you actually put it on a paper, you're like, oh, maybe this is how it went. Maybe this is the thought process behind this.
The
Did you see things?
retrospect.
Yeah, was it? Did you see things a little different than you had for, many years, 20, 30 years?
Absolutely. Some of the stuff I just really hadn't thought that much about. The other thing that happened, some of it was when I went back and reread it or wrote it, but a lot of those things that you're talking about happened when other people saw the book. So I had my co-author, Echo Garrett, and I wrote the book. We kind of decided early on that if it was going to be in my voice, I would do the writing, and I enjoy writing. She really helped me to shape it. And she would see things, connections that I had not noticed. And sometimes she would just see them, and it was so obvious to her, she figured it was obvious to me, but it wasn't. There's an anecdote in there about my cousin having been molested by by her brother, who's the same person who molested me, and early in the book I say, every time my mother and grandmother talked about my cousin, they would say, poor Janice. Janice is deceased now. And I didn't, so I told that anecdote, and I told later what I found out about her having been molested by her brother, but I didn't put together the poor Janice part with the fact that they knew about that, that was something that people in the family knew about, and I missed that. It was interesting because it should have been obvious once I wrote about, what happened to me. So that was a really weird kind of thing that would happen, and some other things my sister would see and put together, and I had not. Sometimes also it's just memory. You don't remember something and somebody else remembers it, or you remember it one way and someone remembers it another way. And then on kind of a last thing I mentioned about family. One night when I was pretty close to finishing the book, and I had not shared it with with Hank, the father who raised me, I just didn't, I wasn't ready to share it with most people. And we were, he's my, he lives in Honolulu, my brother, my mother's family's from Honolulu, so I spent some time there. And we were having dinner one night in a restaurant, my brother, my sister, and Hank and me. And he said, actually, wait a minute, it was actually on an inter-island cruise ship. So like we're having to do this like setting, you know, I'd never done that. And he said, what are the six most terrifying words in the English language? And we all kind of looked at him. This is about a year ago. Oh, he said, my daughter is writing a memoir. And I realized, you know, this was a family event, you know, right? A family. And some of my biggest recent cool conversations have come from people who I've known for many years who are just now understanding, you know, why this is an issue for me. So that's interesting and fun, and that helps me talking to other people too, you know, people who kind of been aware of this but really not thought about it or thought it was weird, and it's like, oh, now I'm sort of getting it. So that's been really interesting.
In your
And
position.
then there's the bigger world, you know, and how this is, you know, landing on people's consciousness, and that's, you know, that's going to be ongoing.
Yeah, where it's landing is very interesting right now because leading up to the podcast, you sent the book. Mike and I have been sharing Foreskin Day on social media. And we work in a corporate environment. So I've left the book on some conference rooms tables as I'm taking out my laptop. I put it on the table and it sparks interest because the book is it's called Penis Business and it's in your
Right.
face. And when we start talking about the book, you can tell people, but majority of people are not interested and it puts them off because it challenges their beliefs
Right.
of
They're not interested, or they're terrified, or they pretend not to be interested, or they think if they touch that book, they're going to get like a social disease. Right.
But even on social media, Mike and I received a couple of messages on our account about that's gross. And I just think it challenges people's belief in the narrative that we've been told our entire
Right.
lives that being circumcised is hygienic. It's a way to keep the kid's penis clean. And when you say in your book and in the work that you do that it's not for any of that. We're being lied to. That automatically shuts them down and that automatically causes some resentment in the conversation. So
Right.
I can't imagine being in your shoes doing it every day. 'Cause just in the little bits and pieces that I've done with the conversations with the book and in social
Right.
media, no, I not it's not very widely talked about. People don't want to talk about it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And you know what I sometimes see as a successful way of breaking through that is to say, you know what, I kind of used to think that stuff too. And then I started talking to her and I realized that we've been lied to about that. You know, kind of make it like I shared your doubt, you know. That's come sometimes effective. And then I think you'll also find that people will come back to you. You know, there'll be somebody 4 months down the line who will come back to you and say, you know, I read something else about this issue, you know, whatever, because it does embed. And people are who are uncomfortable with it are often almost desperate to distance themselves from it. But even that desire to distance oneself from it means that it's affecting you, right? Otherwise, you just don't notice.
And
I have.
go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you.
We're just in a world of misinformation right now too, like especially in this time we're in. So it's like I don't think people want to even go vet it out, and even if they did find proof, they wouldn't believe it, you know. So it's really tough, but it's also in a time when COVID going on and seeing how the government took advantage of people, it can't be much of a surprise right now. So it could be a little more believable because no
Yeah.
one's trusting corporations or even the government. So it's kind of
Right.
a good and bad place to be for you know, pushing this issue.
Yes, because it's so embedded in our culture, where they might be dubious about a new vaccine or a new pharmaceutical, this is so entrenched, they don't think of it in the same terms. But I had I was talking to a group of people the other day, and I was getting a lot of, you know, pushback from this one man. He's probably in his early 30s, relative by marriage, someone I've known for years, really, really nice guy. And he started, you know, saying he was glad he was circumcised, and because it's just weird not to be, and all this. And then, you know, conversation evolved. It wasn't a heated conversation at all. And somebody else said, yeah, but it is kind of weird, right? And I said, yeah. I said, if you think about it, why would you want to pay somebody to cut off part of your son's penis? And the guy who had been defending it, I could see that that gave him a different idea. Yeah, like, why are you paying a stranger to cut off part, you know, right? And I didn't, you know, you just have to let some of this stuff sit. You can't fight. And you certainly, someone who's adamant, don't waste your time, right?
Yeah.
But they'll think about it. And we can't change everybody's mind, and we can't change everybody's mind in the same way and with the same words. So that's why people like me who are promoting a cause and an unpopular one, or an uncomfortable, I wouldn't say unpopular, uncomfortable one at that, are always looking for new ways to talk about it, new themes, new people to enlist in the conversation. And Intact America, my organization, and I hope you'll put up the URL, right? But it's intactamerica.org. We have this new campaign called Skin in the Game, which is also under skininthegame.org. And the subheading of it is Circumcision Cuts Through Us All. And I can't believe how long it took me doing this work to really get that. You know, I knew it subconsciously, but there is nobody in this country who's not impacted by circumcision. I mean, maybe somebody who just landed from the moon, or maybe everybody is. You know, men who are circumcised are impacted by it. Men who are not circumcised but who've been ridiculed. Intimate partners, siblings. I mean, I was compromised by circumcision when I was 10 years old and my brother was born and had a complication. It affected me that was 62 years ago, you know, that he was 64 years ago that he was born. And it just affects everybody. And it affects moms. I did a book reading in Atlanta in February at a bookstore, and kind of when opened up the conversation, there weren't very many people there, maybe 8 people. And a woman in the audience who was in her early 80s, maybe a little older even, said, when my son was born, I was knocked out because that's what they did to us at the time. I was drugged. And before I could wake up, they'd taken him away from me. And I kept looking for him to be brought back to me all day. So here she's already been victimized by a brutal, you know, childbirth delivery system at the time, where women were literally knocked out with ether. I kept waiting for them to bring him back to me. And when they hadn't brought him back to me, and I kept asking, and they said, well, we'll bring him soon. We'll bring him soon. And then when I called at 11 o'clock at night, I said, I want my baby here. And they said, well, he's a little bit upset about his circumcision, so how about we bring him to you in the morning? And I said, no. And I made them bring him to me. And she said, and she went, it's like, this is like alive for this person. I mean, the son is 60, right? She's been living with this memory and this experience for 60 years. She also had to fight to breastfeed him, because the other thing that typically happened is that women were told, first they were deprived of their baby for hours, and then they were told they didn't have enough milk to breastfeed their baby so that they could slap the infant formula into the take-home kit, you know? And so there's nobody who has lived through this system who has not been impacted in one way or another. And I have been really interested in how many older women are coming forth with these stories. You know, I expect, you know, men who remember it, older men who have subconscious memories, partners, intimate partners. But I had kind of not thought about all of the mothers of all ages. I need the young mothers I got, right? Because it happened, you know, 2 years ago or 6 years ago. But women who are, you know, grandmothers, great grandmothers, remember what happened when their sons were born. And that's so circumcision really does cut through all of us if we live in this country. That's not true in France or England or, you know, China, other parts of the world. But in this country, it's almost a universal experience. And that's kind of horrifying when you think about it.
Are there any negative side effects from not getting circumcised?
Well,
Are there any drawbacks from a medical or hygienic? Like, are there anything since you've been on this journey and since the last time we've talked? I think it's been a couple of years now, right?
Shit.
Has
I
it been?
think about, yeah, probably.
That's crazy.
Well, yeah, there are a couple of different kinds of things. I mean, it's not like you can't get a problem with your foreskin. You can get a problem with any body part, right? But to prophylactically remove everybody's foreskin, because when they're 90 years old, they might get a tumor on the foreskin, which is only happens to 1 in 100,000 people, and it also happens to people who are not intact, right? I mean, so you could get that. That'd be really bad. But 1 in 8 women in this country will be diagnosed with breast cancer, as opposed to 1 in 100,000 men with penile cancer. We don't go cutting off everybody's breasts. You could get appendicitis, but we don't dig the appendix out of every child, even when they have other surgery. So something can happen to the foreskin, extremely rare. It's not exposed to the elements, you know, it's made to last, it's made to work. The most common problems with foreskins come from either people tampering with them, usually doctors or mothers under the instruction of a doctor, and I'll explain that a little bit more. Or it comes from yeast infections, which are caused by an imbalance in your intestinal, you know, tract. And you can get yeast infections. People get it in their navel, they get it under their fingernails, they get, you know, it in their mouth. Women get yeast infections, you know, it's very uncomfortable. But yeast infections in intact men are often diagnosed as some kind of terrible infection for which removing the foreskin is recommended. And that's a travesty, because a yeast infection can be treated with probiotics, and it can be treated by keeping your kid out of chlorine, not putting shampoo, you know, not using bubble bath, easy fixes. And foreskin removal is not an easy fix. So the back to the tampering, people don't understand, including doctors, including pediatricians and urologists who are trained in this country. They really don't understand the anatomy of the newborn penis, which is that the foreskin is stuck to the head of the penis. That's the way it's supposed to be. It adheres to the head of the penis, and it will separate over time, just as surely as your child will learn to walk and to talk, just as surely as a kitten's eyes will open when they're old enough for the eyelid to separate. It will separate over time, almost always by the end of puberty, and often way before. The hormones of puberty release that attachment. But there is an obsession in this country, this idea that you're supposed to be able to see the head of the penis. And of course, you can't see the head of a penis in a newborn because the foreskin's there to protect the head of the penis. But you know, I've heard of doctors says, I just have to get a little peek. It's like, why? I just have to see if the hole's big enough. Well, is the kid urinating? Then the hole's big enough, right? Little girls have a tiny pin-sized hole in their urethra that you know through which they urinate. No one's going down there and making sure the hole's big enough. If they're peeing, they're peeing, it's fine. So there's a lot of crazy obsession with seeing the head of the penis. And the head of the penis is an internal organ until hormones make it separate, and that's basically in time for intercourse. Boys will often help the process by masturbating. Some people have very tight foreskins that can almost always be helped along by manual stretching, you know, masturbation, or just, you know, stretching in the shower. So the long answer to your short question is no, there's no across the board medical reason why boys need to have their foreskins cut off. And the problems that come from creating a foreskin make it really a medical violation. It make malpractice to cut off a healthy foreskin, whether prophylactically or, I mean, somebody asks a doctor to do that at the age of 25, but I've heard so many stories of people who young, I might have told this on the show before, you know, went for a college physical, and the doctor who was examining him pointed to his intact foreskin and said, you know, you got to get that taken off. You might as well do it now because you're gonna have to have it taken off eventually. And that's just true,
What
right?
the
It's like it's
hell?
sort of like saying, I don't know, let's do cataract surgery on every baby, you know, let's, I mean, no, you're not gonna have to have it taken off eventually. The chances of you having it taken off eventually are really tiny. And if it's just elective, you want to have it taken off. Not most men, you know, are kept intact, don't want to go through that. And people say, well, you should do it as a baby, when the child's a baby, because they'll never do it as an adult. Well, doesn't that tell you something?
You blew my mind last time we had you on, and you were saying that they use the foreskin for cosmetics
Right.
and other applications. So I was out with some girls, and I had mentioned it, thinking it would blow their mind too, and they already knew about it. So I wasn't sure how that worked, but whenever you were talking earlier about the 80-year-old woman that raised her hand and told the story, what did they use it for back in that time? Was it is it still
Nothing,
cosmetics?
nothing, nothing. And even now, most hospitals just throw the foreskin in the trash. You know, I've talked to men who say that when they think about that, it just makes them sick to think that somebody took a body part of theirs and just a healthy body part and just threw it in the trash. You know, you think of it like drying up somewhere in some landfill or something, you know. So that using the foreskin for, you know, biomedical products, I don't know when that started, maybe back in the 80s. But that is because you never have the consent of the foreskin's owner, that is tissue piracy. You know, people will say, well, you have the mother's consent. Well, the mother doesn't own the foreskin. The baby owns the foreskin. The other thing that, you know, you hear is that well, it's a good thing they're using it for something useful, and that's not usually done to defend cosmetics, but artificial skin for burn victims. But that baby didn't donate that foreskin. You didn't clear that with the foreskin's owner that they wanted to give up. They're willing to give up this body part so that some hypothetical person down the line who needs, you know, a skin graft can get it. The other thing, of course, that's so crazy is that the foreskin is disgusting and dirty and useless. And what's the big deal? Just chop it off. But it's this valuable commodity in the cosmetics market or in the biotech market? You know, which is it? If it's so filthy and so useless and so insignificant that you shouldn't mind, you know, the fact that the baby lost it, that you stole it from him, how can it? I mean, it just makes no sense. It's like having somebody look at your at the coins that you just put on the table in the restaurant and said, oh, you know, 3 pennies, you know, like you're leaving me 3 pennies, you know, I just throw these in the garbage, and then they know that one of the pennies has some tremendous value and they pocket it, right? Like, and we believe that the big teaching hospitals are the places. That's a bad example, right, by the way. But you get the idea. But that the big teaching hospitals are the places that have the contracts with the biomedical companies, and they're very secretive. The contracts are private, very secretive. I have not spent a lot of time trying to get that information. Every time I do, you know, I don't find much, but I do know people who have, and it's all proprietary information. No one's going to tell you. I tell a story in my book about a midwife I know who told me that the teaching hospital she works in, they take the, I always ask people, in the hospital you work in, what do they do with the foreskins? And people working in small hospitals always say, they just goes into the trash, medical waste. And she said, oh, they take them straight down the hallway to the lab. And I said, what does the lab do with them? She said, man, I don't really know. But I know, you know, they test it to make sure that it's healthy. They probably test it for autoimmune diseases, HIV, whatever. And then they, I don't know, pack them up and send them to somewhere.
You know, the way I've had, as I mentioned earlier, like three conversations, and then Mike and I just talked about the foreskin yesterday and a way to make it relatable with other guys. And the way
Right.
that I've been able to resonate with people is by reminding them of their first erection that they can remember when they were little. And when I can remember getting the erection and it being uncomfortable in my pants, but in a good way, like it felt good to rub
Right.
against my pants, but it tickled, right? And that's the way I explain it now. Like if I get an erection in my pants, it feels and it rubs against my pants. Like if my wife teases me or something in public and I get, you know, a little erection, it gets uncomfortable in my pants where it's sensitive because it's so sensitive. I think guys who are circumcised probably are still sensitive, but when it's rubbing against their pants all day, it loses a little bit of the feeling that they're supposed
Absolutely.
to have. And I think
Right.
that's the easiest way that I've been able to resonate with guys because guys my age, we all think about sex all the time. So that's the easiest way to come across of it's like my foreskin is protecting my penis all
Right.
day. And I
Right.
think that's the way to resonate with people. I got a couple, I have some friends that are about to have a son, so I was trying to persuade them not to. So I pushed them to your website. But that's the way I explained it was
Right.
from a
The
sexual
other
advantage.
thing that happens is that men who've been tightly circumcised, who've had a lot of skin removed, they've had the foreskin and then some removed, because in a baby you can't see the difference between the scrotal tissue. You can see the testicles are different, but if you pull too much skin down and cut it off, you've pulled scrotal skin down, and then the boy won't be able to get a full erection without pain. And I've talked to both men and women who have said that when they have sex, the man's penis bleeds. And that's because so much skin was pulled down and taken off that what's left is very, very thin. So both too tight erections and pubic hair on the shaft of the penis and bleeding during intercourse or any kind of friction are not uncommon problems. And the really sad and horrible part about this is that many guys know this is going on, but they don't know why. And then when they find out that it's because of their circumcision, it just totally infuriates them. How could somebody have done this to me? So that's a really good thing to tell people. The other thing that might be useful is that the tissue that connect that keeps the foreskin attached to the head of the penis is the same tissue that keeps your fingernail attached to the nail bed. So if you remove a fingernail for whatever reason, you get it slammed in the door and it doesn't grow back, or the nail bed is excruciatingly sensitive and painful after that. But then over time, it gets tough, right? That's just the process of callousing. And that happens to the penis in a circumcised man. Now, thankfully, it's not as dramatic as the skin on the heel of your foot, or the nail bed, but it definitely is desensitized. It has to be. So that's something to describe to people. You just try these different things. You found one that kind of works. Do you think any of these guys will keep their sons intact?
I think I convinced my friend to, I don't know if I convinced him, but I got him thinking, 'cause he's circumcised. So, it goes against what he believes right now, but it's still early
Right.
on, so there's a
Tell him
possibility.
he doesn't have to feel, be embarrassed about doing something different for his son. I mean, if his son had different color eyes than him, he wouldn't give the son back. Just, and then you can
No,
always
that's
do it
better.
later. His son can decide when he's 25 years old. And if he says that thing about, but it would hurt so much more. I mean, I always say, how do you know? Watch a baby, watch a film of a baby being circumcised. It's torture. How do you know it would hurt less when it's just you can tie a baby down?
Yeah, that documentary, the reason I reached out to you is that I forget the name of the documentary now, but that watching those babies scream and be tied down, that's what's
Yeah, that was American Circumcision,
yeah, there you go. Yep.
documentary by Brendan Morata. That made a big difference to a lot of people.
Yep.
It's old now. I mean, it's probably been 8 years, I think, since it came out.
In my brain, the hesitation, y'all talk about aesthetics and then cleanliness, but I think the major one is the religion component, which you kind of debunked last time. I'd be curious if you were to go over that a little more, because I think the religious thing is they feel like they're going against God, if they don't do it. I wouldn't think the other things. I think it's a lot more welcoming to be uncircumcised now in this day and age.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's came around quite
Well,
a
with all
bit.
due respect, someone who tells you, God wanted circumcision, I mean, circumcision or circumcision is in the Bible, somebody yelled at me one day. So is slavery, in the Bible, wife beating, all kinds of stuff's in the Bible. And in the New Testament, I'm not a religious person, I'm not a biblical scholar, but I do know that the New Testament does not says circumcision doesn't matter, that it's your faith, it's what's in your heart that matters. So any Christian who says circumcision is, recommended by God or just doesn't know their religion very well. They're not religious scholars. Judaism and Islam do endorse circumcision. I would say require, not really required, because plenty of Jews in this country who love their religion do not circumcise their children, or they don't circumcise them in religious ceremonies. They don't see, but most of the world's people are intact, and that includes all the Christian nations in Europe. The Catholics believe that, that cutting the body is a desecration. And I've had American Catholics tell me, well, I'm circumcised because I'm Catholic. It's like, no, you're not circumcised because you're Catholic. You're circumcised because you were born in the United States. Ask your grandfather if he's circumcised. He was born in Italy. He's not. Your Irish grandfather, ask him. He's not circumcised. So that's just, again, I'm not an authority on religion, but I push back with what little I do know, which is that that's basically bullshit.
So I found it. I remember because normally when I read the Bible, I get through Genesis, and right. And it's Abraham. It says, "And God spoke to Abraham, saying, 'This is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you and thy seed after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised.'" So
that's
Genesis before.
That's the Jewish covenant, right, which has nothing to do with Christianity. And since Jews only make 2% of the population of the United States, most Christians could feel pretty comfortable that they're not violating the word of God by keeping their children with the bodies that God gave them. That passage you just read, Mike, if you go a little further, it says also, "and their slaves." That men should circumcise.
forgot that part, didn't you?
Their sons and their slaves. So I just kind of say, well, you know, you might want to look again, you know, the New Testament. I mean, St. Paul says circumcision doesn't, Jesus, you know, Jesus was sacrificed for your sins, and now you don't need to do a bodily sacrifice of the flesh. It's in your heart. So again, don't hire me to preach on a Sunday, but I think people grasp at whatever they can,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it looks ugly. The girls like it better if it's circumcised. It's cleaner. You don't get diseases. I mean, people just will grasp at whatever they've heard or want to believe. And most of those things you can say, you know, really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, what about wiping their behinds?
Yeah.
Like they can't keep their penis clean. And what about the rest of the body parts they have to keep clean?
Yeah.
You know, that you believe, I think we talked about this, you know, you believe your son can grow up to be, you know, a fine carpenter or a college professor, but he can't wash his penis. Sort of anti-male, right? To say that a guy doesn't know how to wash his body. Girls manage, and again, boys manage to wash other stinky body parts. So,
yeah.
And the aesthetic thing is really interesting because, you know, I was certainly, I'll just speak, you know, since I wrote my memoir, I'll speak in the first person here. I was certainly accustomed to seeing circumcised penises until I started traveling, you know, in South America. I spent time in Mexico. And the first time I saw an intact penis, I didn't think, oh my God, this is ugly and horrible. I went, oh, that's interesting. You know, I mean, the same way that you see a really tall guy, you know, or something. Oh, wow. You know, I wonder what that would be like. I mean, because I'm really short. And, you know, and so it didn't gross me out. And I wasn't already, like, you know, campaigning for the cause. And I will say that now, when I see, I don't see too many men these days. When I see a circumcised child, say mother changing a baby in the dressing room or something of a gas station, or a relative with their little naked boy, you know, running, I don't see beautiful. I see a scar, and I think about what that child went through. I wish I didn't feel, I wish I didn't think that, because it makes me so sad to picture. And one of the women who I did a television program with many years ago told me that after she went through an experience where she agreed against her wishes to have her son circumcised, she never felt the same about sex with her partner again, because they would be having sex and she would think about him being mutilated as a baby. The way she put it is, it's not pure anymore. You know, that the image was, the image of that haunted her. And we know it haunts men who, you know, have these flashbacks. So I just think the aesthetics of it, you know, in countries where they infibulate girls, where they remove their labia and sew up the what's left and leave a hole, you know, opening for menstrual blood and urine. I mean, men think that that's attractive. I mean, you'd run for the hills if you saw that. You'd have to say to yourself, wow, this is someone I like, this is someone I love. Let me not be grossed out by this, right? Or let me not think about what happened here. So the idea that it's more aesthetic, it's just something we're used to. I have this wall chart of human anatomy over here I keep in my office, and it's really big. It's like 30 by 18 or something. And the depiction of the male reproductive system has a circumcised penis. And this is produced by the National Library of Science, and it was produced in 2010 or 2000, I forget. It's in the last 20 years. And there's not a foreskin on that penis. That's not the natural male anatomy, right? It would be the same as having a picture of a women's reproductive systems, again, with like the vulva sewn up. I don't know, something else, like the picture of, you know, somebody's head and the ears have big, you know, those plugs. You guys have plugs in your ears? No.
No, I
plugs,
don't.
Earrings?
Those, you know, those plugs
Those
in the
holes?
earlobe?
Oh, I used to have
Yeah, it
them.
would be like having that in a medical textbook as a depiction of the ear,
Yeah.
right? It's an artificially altered body part. So that's why we think it's normal and attractive. If we do think it's attractive, you know, that's why.
Sorry about that. Do you think that it was the times they were living in? Because I still can't even understand why in Abraham's time they would do that. Because everybody's supposed to be made by and from God's image, so it should be perfect. And
Right.
so to have to manipulate your body would be strange. So I wonder if in those times it was dirty and you know. We don't live like we do now, where we can, you know, shower every day and clean up and be very
What if, you know how miscommunications happen like at work and someone says, hey, go drop this thing off at docking 4 or whatever, but they really do it at docking 6? What if they told Abraham not circumcised,
Right.
but they heard and it just misheard? You know
Oh
what I
my
mean?
gosh.
They
There's a
should have
book.
known
The author of this
that.
book, I attended his memorial service last weekend. He was in his early 90s. His name is Leonard Glick, and he wrote a book called Marked in Your Flesh. I have it here.
Marked in your
And
flesh.
it's, can you see it?
It's kind of doesn't it doesn't recognize it as a face, I don't think.
Yeah,
So
yeah. Marked in Your Flesh, Circumcision from Ancient Judea to Modern America. He's a Jewish academic. He was a doctor and then he became an anthropologist. And he spends, oh, I don't know, 400 pages about all this. And religious scholars have been arguing this stuff forever, including the word for penis and leg in Hebrew. Or something can be confused, and you know, and the true meaning. I mean, the Bible wasn't written in English, it wasn't written by one person, you know. So what was actually meant, you know, that's been argued. But also, people have talked a lot about where did circumcision come from? And there's a lot of consensus that it was probably kind of a step up from child sacrifice, because people used to sacrifice children,
yeah, I
right?
could see that. I could see that.
So this was like, and then the other thing is that in cultures throughout the world, the genitals are, you know, very symbolic of life, symbolic. So making a sacrifice, you know, that, so we don't know, but Jews were not living in a dirtier environment than anyone else in the world who doesn't circumcise. Right. So there's no, I've heard sand in the desert. You know, I have a friend who keeps saying, well, sand in the desert. That's why Muslims circumcise. Sand in the desert. It's like foreskin keeps the sand away from the head of your penis, right? It protects, your penis from the sand. So all of these things are hypothetical, and I don't think anyone knows exactly why. I know why the Victorians started it in England and America after, Christians had lived for, 2000 years or 1800 years after the death of Jesus, with their foreskins intact. And the reasons the Victorians started it is because they didn't like boys masturbating, because they thought, it was wrong. They thought it would take them away from better pursuits. They didn't believe in pleasure and sex. So that's how it started in England and America and, the English-speaking countries. They didn't care about hygiene. That was a time when doctors didn't even wash their hands before they delivered a baby or conducted surgery. I mean, when circumcision started being promoted in the 1860s and 70s, Civil War doctors were operating on people on battlefields without any hygiene at all. They didn't even understand germs. So
Now, was there nothing else going on at that time where the doctor, like, there's nothing else the doctor or the medical establishment community could have concentrated on? They just were like, yeah, man, these kids are just masturbating all the time. There's so much masturbation. We got to do something about
These
this.
are the hard times, aren't they?
it was kind of an obsession during Victorian times. Freud, was a little later, but this idea that girls had penis envy and, sex has always been important, and of course, but there are theories about it, and we get a lot of it really wrong in our culture. We don't see things as natural that are just natural. Well, I had an interview recently, and it hasn't come out yet, with someone who writes about books and, book writing, and I went and sat down, we were talking, and she said to me, I don't know if you're going to be able to say this word. And I said, what word? And she looked at my book. And I said, you mean the word penis? And she went,
She laughed.
I mean, so we're pretty messed up when it comes to even people who are obsessed with sex don't necessarily know anything about it. They just know that
Isn't it
what
weird?
they're.
It's weird. We can show on the news drone bombings of other
Yeah.
countries, bombing other countries, people accidentally getting bombed that aren't supposed to be getting bombed.
Victims of shootings.
We can show live footage from cameras where a mass shooter didn't, and then we say his name or her name or whoever did it. But we can't, girls can't show nipples, and we can't say penis out loud.
We can show the nutsack eclipse, though.
I know. What?
The nutsack eclipse. Have you seen that?
No, what
So,
happened?
in a Mexican news station, they were showing a bunch of videos from viewers, and somehow this video slipped through, and it was the moon, and a guy's nutsack was covering the sun,
Oh, how
and it went
funny.
through, so now it's viral.
How did that get in there?
Oh God, send it to me. That's great. Maybe I can make use of it. Yeah, we can show that.
We can
Yeah,
validate,
no,
if he's intact.
it's not, we look for logic here about what, it's just another way of looking for justifying circumcision, actually, right? Because really it makes no real sense, right? And we just have to focus on the fact that it makes no real sense, and that there are all these customs that we have that evolve over time and go by the wayside. I mean, people didn't wash at all until the last 100 years, Americans. Houses, homes had, no indoor plumbing. People took baths if they did, in a tub where the whole family bathed in the same water, once a week. I mean, this obsession with cleanliness is new. I think household soap was created in 1940 or something. Pamay and Ivory soap were the two. I mean, this is like just before I was born, people were, I have friends who were raised in, and I'm certainly, for immigrants and poorer people were living in quarters very crowded and no bathroom and no sink. Only dishes were washed in a wash tub of water brought in from the well. So this idea that there is no evidence that I have ever seen, or even the claim that venereal disease or even other diseases come from a dirty penis. You know, you might not like the way it smells, but dirty penis, if a dirty, and that you could probably get over if you realize some people, you know, body odor doesn't bother them. I mean, just get on a train in France, right? Sorry to the French. But there is no, diseases are caused by different bacteria, and the bacteria in the human body, in the armpit, in the nose, in the mouth, those are bacteria that are defensive bacteria. They're part of the autoimmune system. So there's no reason to believe that what's under the foreskin is any different from any other bodily secretion, right? It's not defecation, right? Even urine is sterile, right? So we are obsessed with this idea that because there's some mucus, some white stuff, you know, smegma there, that it must be filthy and needs to be removed. But we don't remove our normal nasal secretions or our saliva. So we look for all these contemporary justifications because, again, what we're doing is so mind-boggling and so painful and so horrifying and so exploitative. You know, again, why would you pay somebody to cut off part of your son's body? It must be like, you got to have a really compelling reason if you think of it that way. And there just aren't.
There's this, you're talking about hygiene. There's this human microbiome biologist. I guess that's what you call her. Her name's Stephanie Snore. I'm trying to get her on the podcast, but she's studying how clean Americans are compared to like indigenous tribes and people from around the world. And right. She's studying the human microbiome and how our microbiome here in America has been severely decimated because of how many showers we're taking a day. All right. The chemicals that we're using to clean ourselves is actually breaking down our immune system compared right. to people around the world who don't shower, and how resilient they are at fighting off bacteria and viruses. So it's
super important, super, super important work. We need to understand this stuff better. And, you know, yeah, keeping, and then we also do things that are so contradictory, right? So, we don't necessarily really stay as clean as we think we do, right? But but that's, what's her name? Stephanie what?
Stephanie Snore.
Snore, okay.
Yeah, it's she's a human microbiome.
Oh, I hope you can get her on.
Yeah.
Can I say a little bit more about my book and our Community Game campaign?
Yeah,
you guys have a few more minutes?
Yeah, come on,
we
bring
need
it.
To talk about the book. Come on.
Bring it.
So my book, This Penis Business, a memoir, came out at the same time as a book from Marilyn Milos called Please Don't Cut the Baby, a memoir. And Marilyn was really the founder of the Intactivists, the anti-circumcision movement in this country. And Marilyn has been a friend of mine for many years. And we both decided to write our memoirs at the same time without discussing it with each other ahead of time. We just all of a sudden found ourselves both writing our memoir. So when I found my publisher, Echo Garrett and Lucid House Publishing, I told her about Marilyn's book and she said, let's do them together. Let's publish them together. So they were both released on February 20th, 2024. It was just really, really exciting. And Marilyn's, you know, was a Bay Area, San Francisco hippie, you know, back in the day. She's, I think, 83 now, 83 or 84, and had a really interesting life. She was Lenny Bruce's personal assistant. Wow. She went to fourth grade with Jerry Garcia from Grateful Dead. I mean, she just has a really, you know, interesting life. And she saw her first circumcision when she was 39 years old, and realized when she saw it and almost died seeing the torture the baby was going through, realized that she had let her three sons be circumcised, having no idea what it even was. And so that, and then she lost her job from telling other people in the hospital about circumcision and giving them that information, and went out and founded the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers, NOCIRC, and then later Genital Autonomy. And she's on the board now of Intact America. So the two books came out together. My book, This Penis Business, and Marilyn's book, Please Don't Cut the Baby. In the course of writing and starting to think about how we were going to promote the book, Intact America developed a new campaign called Skin in the Game. And it was based on these photo shoots that we did. I think we told you about the one in Dallas.
Yeah.
We did photo shoots in Atlanta and Dallas, and we invited people to come and talk to us. If they, we said we were doing the photo shoots to depict people's stories and feelings about circumcision. And we advertised it in on actors' websites and said, you know, this is, or Impact America's doing this. If you'd like to mo know more, contact us. And then we would tell people what it was about. And some people said, you know, no, I'm not interested. An astonishing number of people said, oh, I would really like to come and talk about that. I'd really like to do this. So we gave everyone a $100 gift card to cover their whatever expenses. And told them to wear jeans, and we gave everybody a black t-shirt. And I can send you some of the images. So I don't know if you intersperse them when you do the final cut of the podcast,
Oh, yeah, we can do
but
that.
the publicity for it is extraordinary, and you can see it on skin in the day, skininthegame.org. So we have these photos. The photos were taken by a very marvelous photographer named Kevin Garrett. It was his idea how to do this. The name Skin in the Game was my idea, so we created it all ourselves, and we have the most astonishing images of people who were asked to think about what circumcision was. And in many cases, they're thinking about their own experiences. They're thinking about their children. And we have rolled it out on social media, and it's getting a lot of impact. And we also, did I include the booklet, John, with my book?
You did, yes.
Yeah, so that's Skin in the Game. That's the campaign. And again, the tagline is circumcision cuts through us all. And we have stories of people of every demographic. You know, and we also said in the ad, we're looking for people of any color, ethnicity, size, shape, sexual orientation, you know, gender identity. And we got the most incredibly diverse group of people. In Dallas, we got more Latinos than in Atlanta. And people's stories, we're featuring them on our social media, on Intact America's Facebook page, and on our websites. And the stories are extremely moving. Mothers, you know, who were duped, people who, you know, have never felt okay. We had two first cousins come. They came together, and they're approximately the same age. They're probably in their early 20s, had both been circumcised by the same doctor, and both were maimed beyond what a regular circumcision is. Every story you can imagine. So yeah, that I'd like people to know about that and to look at skininthegame.org and see the stories that are coming out about this.
Yeah, we'll definitely post that in the podcast description.
Great.
Jordan, what's the is there a I want to say end goal, but is this a movement that is started by the people and is carried through with people, or is this something that you're hoping that like regulatory bodies will adopt and help push too?
I don't think a regulatory body will adopt it until the people either demand it or stop doing it. You know, politics and PR and laws follow follow public sentiment, right? They don't create public sentiment. But the end goal is to end child circumcision in this country. We are doing it through information and through story sharing and through putting people in touch with their own experiences. I think I underappreciated that, sort of like you're seeing when you talk to people, then you see people have to realize this impacts them also. And I have seen a groundswell with regard to how people relate to the message. And I know some of it is my own, my delivery has matured, right? But a lot of it is just the time. Like, people are now irate that that their choices about what to do with their bodies are being taken away from them, have been taken away from them. They're, whether it's, and I don't talk publicly about my position on any of these things. I mean, whether it's being required to take a vaccine or not allowed to make reproductive choices for oneself, people now understand the concept. So when we did Atlanta Pride last year, we had a booth at Atlanta Pride, and Roe v. Wade had just been overturned, and people would come up to our booth and find out what it's about, and they go, "Oh, right, like this is a bodily autonomy issue." Mm-hmm. Now, that was not even in the general popular dialogue. Academics knew what it meant, feminists knew what it meant, but everybody got it. Like, this is about people's rights to their own bodies. And so things are changing, and making the conversation more open and less threatening and is part of that. So what you guys are doing, I mean, it's like awesome to just sit here and have this conversation and ask questions, and nobody has to be embarrassed. And, it's not an embarrassing issue. It's a real life thing that we're talking about, and people should be proud to share this information and to share the information with their children, and just anything you really want to change, you have to be able to talk about. If you can't talk about it, how are you going to change it?
Yeah, agreed.
People should be in the pulpit talking about this, right?
Well, there's a big movement, at least in my social media feed. It's very cultivated to like holistic stuff right now. So I may be a little bit on the fringe of it, but there's more and more women like opting for a natural birth. I'm seeing on social media, women are getting off birth control. Everyone's starting to take a step back culturally, I feel like.
And think how far down the line they've gone with all of this artificial intervention, right?
Yeah. And even death. Mike and I had a podcast where we talked about death, and terramation is becoming legalized in states across the country. So even the way we look at death and approach that whole process, I feel like as a culture, a vast majority of us are starting to take a step back and really analyze things a lot differently, which is nice. And this is one subject where there's not a whole lot of people, at least like in social media, talking about it. But I think more and more, as time goes on, more and more, we'll see more and more people starting to wake up to it. Because right now, it feels like from a reproductive standpoint, there's a lot of focus on women. And I think you're helping push the aspect of, male genitalia. So,
yeah. And people realize now also how much we've been exploited, by the commercialism, right? How so much of these things that we've fallen for have nothing to do with human well-being, for our own well-being, whether it's, ultra processed food, whether it's all the drugs that we're pushed to take from really early on, all the baby products that are subsequently found to, or cosmetics subsequently found to have toxins. Wait a minute. Like you say, let's just do nothing, right? How about we just leave things the way, nature intended, until there's a compelling reason to intervene, you know. And I think you're right, and I think this all plays into that. Like relax a little bit, you know. You don't have to rush to cut off part of your son's penis. I give him, how about you give him like some time to figure this out and time for you to figure it out. The a lot of what happens with things that are pushed on us is there's this urgency that, you know, and it's facilitated by, you know, having Apple Pay, you know, like I don't have to, and having Amazon. I mean, I'm, you know, guilty as charged. I mean, I fall prey to Amazon too, you know, but you don't have to intervene and every day of your life in things that if left alone are just fine. I say to people who say they're going to circumcise their son anyway, no matter what, you know, I tell them, I say, okay, why don't you think about this? You can always do it. Postpone it for a month. You know, postpone it for a month. And I've had some success that way, you know. Then they don't circumcise their child. They fall in love with their child the way he is. They see that he's fine. And they don't have to do anything. It's like, oh, I don't really feel like making an appointment to do that. So that's another, you know, anything you can do to bring people back to their common sense will help to end this practice.
You know, I may have missed it, but you're talking about like vaccinations and stuff too, and that's kind of the same time. You know, they're doing the circumcision, and then they pump all those shots within that period of time. That's a big controversial thing too, because they think that MMR leads to autism, and then what was the one you were listening to Schultz the other day? The second shot is for like sexually transmitted diseases, and he's
Oh,
like.
that HPV vaccine that they give
Yeah.
to young kids,
Yeah. He's
right.
like, hold on, pump the brakes here.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
got
like,
time,
yeah, I
right?
got time on that one.
I got some
But,
time.
so what are your thoughts on that? 'Cause that's something I haven't had children yet, but that's, the waking up thing that John was talking about. People are waking up to the vaccines as well. And opting out for them. And it kind of makes life a little more difficult 'cause, sometimes they can't go to public school if they don't do that, or they have to have some sort of note. I don't know what the
I don't
process
have a
is.
position really on vaccines. I don't know enough about them. I don't think anybody does actually. You know, so this is my issue. I have said I'm so glad I don't have a young child right now because I don't know what I would do. I also have said, you know, if anybody cares what I think, not all vaccines are created equal. My mother had polio in 1954, and my family were among the earliest people who got the vaccine, this when the Salk vaccine came out. And you know, we might all be dead if it wasn't for that. I mean, I nobody would advocate for, you know, going back and not, you know, vaccinating people against smallpox. That's not, so again, not all vaccines are created equal. That's about all I know. I again intuitively question when there's so much hype about something that is being produced by the drug companies. I just want to like stop the train and think and learn more. But yeah, you're right. If you have a child and you want to send your child to public school, and you know, I don't know. I don't know what I would do if I was in that position. So I'm glad I'm not. But
Well,
I do know about circumcision, right?
got that one.
Right.
You're
I have no hesitation or second thoughts about telling people that they can skip the circumcision and your child will be happier for it, and his future partners will be happier for it.
Georgiana, we appreciate your time. We had a great time speaking with you as always.
Well, thank you again for having me back. That's really a that's a great endorsement for our cause and for me. I really appreciate it.
And we love everything that you do. What's the websites where people can reach you one more time?
Intactamerica.org is our main website. We have a bunch of other websites too. We have a foreskin.day website, which is pretty cool. Skin in the Game, our new campaign, has its own website, skininthegame.org, and there's a lot of information about our books on skininthegame.org. Again, the two books are This Penis Business by me, George Ann Chapin, and Please Don't Cut the Baby, a memoir by Marilyn Milos. And both of them are available from any booksellers. You can order them from local bookstores or from Amazon, Barnes and Noble, you know, Goodreads online. And if you read them, and in fact, I'll ask you guys, if you could do us a review, that would be awesome on Amazon or Goodreads.
Yeah,
do,
absolutely.
There, it's really important for authors trying to get the word out to have their books promoted and reviewed on the website. So
no,
thank you so much.
We understand the importance of reviews, so
we'll
definitely do
right?
that.
And I'm going to go back and look at that that one. Oh, you said you're trying to get the microbiome person on the show. You haven't had her yet, right?
Not yet. Yeah, I sent an email early this week, Stephanie Snore. So I think she teaches at Harvard or some Miami-Dade, something like that. But I heard her on another book from another author. I was listening. I'm listening to an audiobook, and it mentioned her, and I was like, "Oh, that sounds like an interesting conversation."
Right.
So,
yeah, well, I'd be interested to know if she's thought about the microbiome of you know, genitals. I mean, they got their own little world there.
Yeah, for sure.
Foreskin. Yeah. So I'll look at her work and see. Maybe you can send her a note.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. If you get in touch with her before I do, then let me know. We'll play.
Yeah,
we'll
I was thinking
piggyback.
You'd probably be in touch with her before me. She'd probably be more, well, I hope she'd be more interested in coming on your podcast than having me send her This Penis Business, but maybe not. So.
Well, Georgianne, also, if you have any, you know, colleagues or it doesn't have to be foreskin related. It can be anything that you think is interesting. Send them our way, authors,
absolutely,
storytellers.
That's great. And would you be interested in talking to another person about some aspect of this topic? Because I got a couple of great interviews.
Yeah. We'll probably spread them out. You know,
sure.
That way it's not so, you know, back to back.
Right.
But yeah, any other topic, feel free to email anytime that way. Because Mike and I are.
I'll take you up on that. That's
okay.
Great.
Okay.
And it's so nice to talk to you. I hope to be able to meet you in person one day, both of you.
That was my next thing. If you come to Texas anytime again, let us know, and we'll, or even if it's.
I'll be in Austin area, I'm sure, to do a book reading at some point.
Okay.
I'll be there. And you
let
know,
us
I was,
know.
Yeah, you know, I was born in Texas. So
yep. Yeah. Well, let us know, because we're in Houston, so we're not far.
Oh, you're in Houston. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I got a couple board members there, and I've got a couple people to see there too. So I did not go last time. I just stuck to Dallas. All right.
All right.
Good.
Thank you, Georgianne. You have a good day.
Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.